Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and today I am very excited because let's all tie wrap. And when I say tie wrap, I don't mean the art of tie wrapping ties around cables. But let's all tie wrap because the FCC and the DOL tell us how. FCC, Federal Communications Commission, DOL, Department of Labor. For those of you that don't know, OSHA is part of the Department of Labor, okay? If you don't know that by now, you're living under a rock, so wake up. So what does TIRAP stand for? TRAP, TRAP, whatever you want to say. Telecommunications Industry Registered Apprenticeship Program for the Occupation of Telecommunications Tower Technician. That's a mouthful, fellas, and I got the three links in there. I have the announcement of when they're going to announce it to the public. I have the guidelines in there, which is a PDF file, and I have the outline of the scheduled training, which is another PDF file. And why is this such a big deal? It's because they have taken the time, the FCC working together with the DOL, to actually outline the requirements that we're going to need for tower technicians. Okay? That's why it's a big deal. Remember I said they outlined what a competent person was? Well, here are the outline. Telecommunication Tower Apprentice Level 1. And it's not as easy as you think, fellas. You're not going to be able to take a guy for 10 bucks an hour and just throw him on a tower and hope for the best. They actually have requirements laid out here. So that's what this article's about. You know, my blog, waitsilver.com/podcast or waitforwireless.com, either one. But the official announcement is going to be on October 14th, 2014 at 1 p.m. in D.C., so it's Eastern time, fellas. And, you know, the requirements are laid out. To me, it's a big deal. I don't know what you guys think, but to me, this is amazing. I am very happy to see this because this is what we've been talking about for a long time, standards. Now, let me tell you something. Just a word to the wise here. If they lay out these standards and we follow them, and then we have, say, 10 more deaths next year, you know, something's wrong. We got a lot of incompetent people out there. The reason I say that is because we're always trying to figure out what's wrong, and this is what I've been hoping for. If something goes wrong, we can look at everything and say, well, that guy must just be stupid. And I hate, you know, obviously that's very ignorant. You wouldn't say that about someone that did pass. But we're trying to take away all the excuses for failure. I worked with this guy once, and he was really into procedures and processes, and I'll tell you why. Because he thought if someone failed in the field, it was a reflection on him. And if it wasn't his fault, the guy must be stupid. So when you're training your engineers or your techs to do field work, things are a little different now. But the one thing that has gotten better, I think, is the fact that in most cases, we have a process or a procedure to follow. For instance, in the old days when you worked on transmitters and you had tubes in there, you had a procedure to follow to peak up the to get peak power, minimum current out of the, say, tube transmitters. I don't know if anyone remembers tubes out there, but there was a process that you kept to, you had to balance the max power out with the max life of the tubes, because tubes are very expensive. So what you would do is work with this procedure to do it exactly the way you're supposed to do it, because everyone had their own way to do it, and that's fine as long as you get the same result. But if one guy goes for max power and he's burning a tube every year, it's a lot of money out of pocket every year. Now take that times, let's say you have 100 transmitters out there. Now you're replacing 100 tubes every year. Let's say tubes are just randomly, at the time I think they were about $600, but let's say $1,000. So 100 tubes, $1,000, $100,000 a year in tubes to stay on the air. When I was in paging, you had to stay on the air. Downtime was everything. You had to have spares. But 100 grand, that's a hit. That's a hit, fellas, just because you didn't know what you were doing. So the goal was max power, max tube life, so you got to balance the two. So you get as much power as you can, and you have the tube last as long as you can. You don't want low power because you don't have coverage. You don't want too high a power because then you blow the tube. Anyway, one more thing of interesting knowledge that nobody probably cares about. Sorry. So back to this. So This apprentice deal is very interesting to me because it talks about on-the-job learning. They go over it. The documentation is very good. When you click on those three links in my blog, you'll see that two are PDFs and one actually has the guidelines. I would highly recommend getting the outline of the schedule and the training. It's all in there. They lay it out nice and clean. And like I said, they'll make it official on October 14th. And again, very exciting to me. So this they break it up into safety training and technical training. So when you look at this, the safety training, OSHA 10, Telecom, Authorized Climber, Personal Protection Equipment, PPE, CPR, First Aid, BVP, Radio Frequency Awareness, RF Awareness. That's because, people get fried by the RF out there. So they just want you to be aware of what you're going into when you go up. Job Site Safety Analysis and the Scope of Work. Scope of Work's big to me, fellas. I'm going to put a bunch of blogs out about it here soon. And I would have put it out today, but this came up. This is big news. And then also technical training, which again covers the SAL, the basic rigging, the material handling. And I think what this is going to mean to the industry, I'll get back into it here in a minute in the overview, but I wonder how people are going to be affected by this because when you look at it now, you're no longer be able to go, going to be able to throw a $10 an hour person out there in the tower just because they're healthy and they're not afraid of heights. You're going to have to train people properly, and the people are going to have to be trained properly. And it's going to have to be someone that really wants to do it. So, someone that's just doing it for a summer to get paid, I think those days are going to go by. I think the requirements are laid out. And if you're a climber, I think you'll be able to demand more money because you're skilled labor. Got to have the certs to back it up. Okay? I mean, I'm not just saying, I climbed for 20 years. Because they probably will grandfather a lot of those guys in. But the reality is, you got to back it up. Oh, and there's more to it than that. I was just starting out. I got sidetracked here. But I just think now, it's going to be tower climbing. The tower technician is going to be recognized as the skilled professional labor that he is. It's more than just labor, it's a skilled job. Sorry, guys. Okay, technical training, the SAL, the basic rigging, material handling, the rope, the knots, operate hand and power tools, drills, saws. They go into that a little more with torches and so on. Operate trucks, trailers, and equipment, knowledge of the proper Department of Transportation regulations, if applicable, and they are applicable, trust me. Load securement, big deal. You want to make sure the load's tied down. And trust me, I've seen a lot of loads go over. This one time, we were hauling dishes. Or we had people haul dishes. Loaded them up, and I don't know if you ever loaded like 10-foot or 12-foot dishes, put them in the back of, say, a truck, a steak body. And the mistake we made, they have radomes, right? Well, the radomes, even though they're sort of heavy to lift in, they get caught by the air because they're like a semicircle. It's like literally half a circle, half a bowl. Looks like a bowl, half a globe is what I meant to say. So it does. It looks like a literally like a big bowl, big 10-foot bowl. So when you're working with those dishes and you're loading them up, you should put the dishes on top because the dishes are heavy and they're steel and they're fairly flat. You have maybe a 30 to a 60 degree arc in them. And then you have the radomes which cover them the rest of the way. And if you never worked with dishes, the whole idea of the radome on a dish, the cover is couple fold. One, it protects a feed horn because in those big dishes, the feed horns stick way out, probably about 3 or 4 feet. The other thing it does, it keeps snow and everything off the dish. Anyone who's never done dish work or never had a DirecTV at home, when you get ice buildup and snow buildup on the dish, you lose signal, especially when it starts to melt. It's just like when you're in heavy rain, you start to lose signal. You have attenuation. And all that depends on the frequency. It's not one fits all. You can have a torrential downpour and your 6 gig link will stay up, no problem. 11 gig might take some hits. Your 18 gig link might go down, especially when you're working. I did a lot of work in, say, off the bay and off the ocean. When you're talking about across the bay and across the ocean, and when I say across the ocean, they would do links like from peninsula to peninsula, and you would have problems with a couple things. One, if there was that salt air fog caused problems, and two, not only the mist. But say the the torrential downpour, because when you're near the water, it seems like you have a lot of rain. It's just a torrential downpour. You have a lot of attenuation. And then God knows if you ever had a 23 gig link, or even, you know, you take hits there if you're running on the edge. And it can work perfect any other time. But when it rains, you take a hit. It's just the way it is. All right, I'm back. So trucks, trailers, talked about the radome, and I got way off there. And introduction to various types of structures and appurtenances. So self-supporter, guy, monopole, stealth structures, rooftop, antennas. Fellas, if you're out there climbing, I should say ladies and gentlemen, people, if you're out there climbing and you don't know that, you know, if you don't know your tower type, what are you doing? If you're only climbing on one type of tower, great. And I will admit this. Most people that do communications work, chances are it's a monopole or a self-supporter. Not a lot of guide towers. There are some, but not many. And the other thing I'll say, I always thought it was funny with the Fisk. You know, I was a big fan of the Fisk, and everyone else told me the Petzl idea. Now there's even more options out there for safety. But everyone say, well, over 300 foot, it's no good. If you're in communications, there probably aren't too many times you're over 300 foot. It probably isn't too often. What you're probably doing there is, you know, a Fisk would be good. But I do get the argument that you got to really know what you're doing in practice to understand to put the Fisk in properly. In fact, when that accident happened the other day, one guy said, I'll bet they were using a Fisk and they only, you know, wrapped it for a figure eight. Because when you only wrap it for a figure eight with two people, and you're going to fly down that rope because it's going to be hard to keep control. But if you wrap it the way the Fisca should be wrapped with the proper drag and the, you know, run it through one more time, anyone who ever worked with a Fisk will know what I'm talking about. You're going to have more drag and you're going to have more control. And sorry, guys, I'm just getting off on tangents tonight. But back to the tie wrap. And TRAP, however you're going to say it, but basically the apprentice program that the FCC and the Department of Labor are laying out, this is really exciting to me. I mean, they really covered a lot, I thought, for what the requirements should be, and that's a good thing. You know, even knots, right down the knots, something that's often overlooked. When you look at the details in this, you'll see the two knots that they require are the clove hitch and the bow line. And I thought it was interesting they got down to that type of detail. And they not only go for the bow line, they go for the inline and the normal. And I got to be honest with you, I just practiced them the other day. It's funny how quickly I forget stuff like that. I don't tie any knots anymore. But it's fun to look at. And there's a website called Net Knots, which is really cool because it shows a lot of knots on it. And it shows you how to tie them. And it's just netknots.com. I don't have it in here, but it's netknots.com. And it just goes through every knot there is out there. Really cool. The guy put a book out, too. I think his name's Adam Beck. He's got a book of knots out, too. I'd highly recommend it. And when I say a book, it's a physical book, because his thought was for that was to get people to carry it with them. He actually, if I remember right, the pages are laminated, so you can take them out the site, they can get rained on and so on, and you have your reference for knots there. You know, I'll make myself a note. I'll put that in the blog. I'll put the Net Knots link in there, and I'll also put his book in there if I can find it. Net Knots. And book, I think it's Adam Beck. All right, fellas, let me move on. Oh, sorry. All right, people, ladies and gentlemen. I know quite a few women climbers out there. And, sorry, women. Don't mean to be that way. I usually say you guys, but because that could apply to anybody. But all right, people, ladies and gentlemen. So the safety training, like I said, not only outlines the OSHA 10, but authorized climber. It outlines a lot, and I'm really happy to see it outline what it does because, like I said, they really go into specifics. I don't know if it's what everyone out there would appreciate, but I think everything they're going over is very good. Oh, hey, the other thing they get into is the bloodborne pathogens. And I don't know if you remember, I did that blog on bird poop. I'll put a link in there. But it's something to think about, the bird poop and the ticks. And the reason that's such a big deal is because, again, you can get sick off this stuff. These are all hazards that I'd be willing to bet a lot of people just overlook. That's why it's so important to have the first aid, the CPR, and all the other training. Sorry, guys, I'm just stuttering today. I don't know what it is. I just really on fire here, because when I saw this, someone sent me this, I was really excited. So it's important that you understand that there's more hazards out there than just the fall. And I always think it's funny, when I used to mention hazards, like especially on Facebook, people would be like, oh yeah, you could fall. Yeah, you could fall. If you're taking proper precautions, you shouldn't fall. Now, if the tower goes over, that's another story. But I guess my point is, you got to be aware of all the hazards out there. And that's one of the reasons that they bring up hazard assessment, because you have to be able to assess all the hazards out there. Ticks are something that are commonly overlooked. I guarantee you, so many people get Lyme disease or Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Man, I have a hard time saying that, because they overlook stuff like that. These are all things you need to look out for. That's why I did the blog about putting the stuff on you to kill the ticks so they don't get on your skin. Put it on your boots, on your pant legs, if you have long sleeves, maybe on your shirt. That's why I bring stuff like that up. And it's great that they recognize that on here, the bloodborne pathogens, because, I mean, there's just more hazards out there than just falling or tripping or having a wrench fall on your head. You really got to have your eyes open and be aware. That's why I always say that someone that has a lot of common sense will do very, very well in this job. Common sense is huge in this job. And when I say common sense, you know, it isn't like just putting two and two together. It's being aware, being alert, and paying attention to what you're doing. That all plays into common sense. Whether you appreciate that or not, it does. It's very important. So they outline a lot of that. Hey, the other thing they outline are trucks and trailers. And I think I told you when I was, back when I was doing a lot of climbing, we all had our CDLs with that company because anyone would have to drive the stake body. We didn't have the air brake certification. And I think I said that before. That's a bigger test. We basically just had the basic certification and for driving a heavy truck. And the other thing we got like forklift certifications and a couple other things, you know, things that really don't play into day-to-day, but the stake body did, because anyone might have to drive that. Could be at a site. We all had trailers. I hardly ever pulled a trailer, fellas. I'm going to be honest with you, but I worked with a couple guys. They were really good at the trailer. They could pull it, you know, they could back it into almost anything. If you're backed up a trailer, a lot of guys are really good at it, but some guys are so much better. They were so much better than I was. They could put that thing almost anywhere. I mean, it was really incredible. And they just really knew what they were doing. So anyways, they also talk about hand tools. Now, why do they bring up hand tools and power tools? Because you're going to use them a lot when you're out there. They go into the detail. They even talk about torches. And they talk about understanding how to weld. Anyone who's done a lot of tower work, and I'd be willing to bet a lot of you guys may have never done it, but you used to have to CAD weld when you were out there. I don't know if you all know what CAD welding is. It'd be important for you to learn, well, if it's part of your job, but we used to have to CAD weld, and I think everyone knew how to do it. And that, what that is, basically, for those of you that don't know, you put it, you put the metal together, you put the weld, you usually have a metal to weld it together. I don't know if you ever weld it, but you usually have some type of brazen stick or something. And when you're at a tower site, when you CAD weld, it's basically a big shot of gunpowder that goes off on top of the metal. So you got all your metal there, you got your welding metal, you're holding everything together, you got your big heavy gloves on, you got your protective face mask and eyewear on, and you're clicking your the igniter, which is basically Flintstone, right? It's like having a huge lighter. And then once the gunpowder ignites, you got to hold everything together until it's done, and then you got to hold it together until it cools down. It cools down very quickly. It doesn't take long at all. So, but anyway, it's really great that they mentioned that on this. It just really shows they put some thought into it. They didn't just say generically, oh, you got to have your safety training and you're done. You got to have CPR and you're done. They, to me, I know some of you guys will argue this and say they should have, could have, would have done that. Or I know, should have, could have, would have added more. Maybe they should have added more, but it's a start, people. This is a great place to start. It's an official body, Department of Labor, laying down the requirements. And the FCC had a say in it, so they're pushing this, which is just wonderful, I think. I know, you know, you guys are probably laughing at me for saying that, but it really is. This is an exciting day in the industry. And for anyone who doesn't believe that, or life will go on as usual, I guess, but it's laying an outline of the requirements. So a lot of these companies that didn't take the time to properly train people are going to be required to do it. It's going to be out there. It's already out there. The PDFs are out there. They're going to make it official, you know, in October. So that's why I get a little fired up about this. And, you know, one of the big things they say is the schedule affects all this because people have to get work done quickly and they take shortcuts. Well, I've been on both sides. I know what it's like to push a crew. I know what it's like to be on a crew being pushed. And the best thing you can do if you're pushing somebody is listen. Because if the crew wants to get done most of the time, I couldn't imagine why they want, but they want to finish a job. If they don't want to, if they say they can't do it or won't do it, there's got to be a reason why. So listen. Listen to what the reason is. I put out that near miss story about the rooster head that broke. I mean, that tells you, you know, you can take all the chances you want. You can play the odds and say, oh, it won't happen to us. It won't happen to me. It won't happen here. But what if it does? So if you're going to play the odds, play the better odds of being better safe than sorry. Instead of trying to haul everything up in one heavy load, haul it up in two, you know. And one of the other things I bring up in my article here is, like, how's this going to affect the industry? Well, deployments may be delayed, but I really don't think they will. Not like you think. They're not going to be big delays. I mean, are they going to be delayed more than the auctions were delayed? You remember how long it took for the frequencies to get auctioned off by the FCC? I'm not busting on the FCC. They got to think everything through. But there's a delay that nobody, well, people did question it, but I mean, nothing you could do about it. The installation may take longer because people are going to be cautious. So it may take longer. But what about the OEM getting the equipment out and working the bugs out? It takes a long time. Trust me, I know. And it goes back to what I said. Everyone thinks that the climbing crew is the one thing they can push and push and push. Well, now, if you're in a crew, you got to be able to push back. You got to, now, when I say push back, don't be a jerk about it, but let's face reality. If you can't do it in the time allotted, you can't do it in the time allotted. And I hear about these guys that get pushed around all the time, especially by turf vendors. They seem to be the worst. Because they want the carriers to be happy and maybe they have a bonus riding on it. I just don't know. Well, now you got to be pushing back. Tower crews are going to be pushing back. That's why I get fired up about this. And if you're thinking it's going to be a lot more money, well, it is. The tower crew companies are going to have to pay more to train people. They're going to have to pay more to make sure people are qualified to go out and do the work. It's not going to be free and it's not going to be easy. And we'll probably lose some people that just don't care. And it's not fair, maybe, but I think it is fair, and I'll tell you why. Because if you don't care about this, and if you don't want to take the time to get certified and trained, it's probably not your passion, probably not the job or the field you want to be in. All those people that do this for a summer job, I'd say you're out. I'd say maybe find something safer to do. You know, work at a McDonald's or a Wendy's, something where you just, you know, the worst thing that could happen is if you get robbed. You know, which let's hope that doesn't happen too often. I don't know. I'm sort of a goober. I don't hear about it too often. But anyway, does it mean the climbers are going to get paid more? Yeah. Does it mean that eventually the carriers are going to pay more for deployment? Yeah, but they should be. I mean, let's look at it this way. What's a human life worth? So we're doing everything we can to save lives, or rather the FCC and the Department of Labor are doing everything they can to save lives. They are. They are putting requirements on the line so that people know that qualified people are on site. They're putting the requirements there. And that's why it matters, people. That's why when they put these requirements on, you guys will go in at the lowest bid. You'd better make sure that you're covering training, you're covering those days that your crew has to practice rescue, that your crew has to practice CPR, practice first aid, sit in class. All that adds up. Trust me, I know. Guy I worked for, he was great because he took it seriously, cared for us, made sure we got trained. If we said we needed it, he would only push back. It was a lot of money, but usually it was worth it. And you know what I'm going to compare it to? Here's what I'm going to compare it to. I don't know if you ever went for technical training, but let's say whoever the OEM is. You know, years ago, Harris was big. Harris Microwave. I did a lot of Harris Microwave, okay? You know what? Harris only would warranty the equipment that when the equipment was installed, tested, certified, and inspected by Harris-trained employees. You can look at it two ways. One way you could look at it is like Harris is making a ton of money on training, right? They're getting people through for these different levels of certification on specific equipment. The other way you could look at it is They want to make sure their equipment's going to work properly. They don't want some Yahoo out there hooking power up backwards and then returning it saying it was DOA, right? I mean, you want qualified people. Trust me, the Ericssons, the Alcatel-Lucents, the Nokias, the Samsungs in the cellular industry, I'll even throw NEC in there, NEC, they're going to want qualified people to work on their equipment. And it's not like Wi-Fi. With Wi-Fi, you know, anyone that knows IT can probably put it in, configure it, and get it out working properly. But in this case, when you're talking thousands of dollars for, like in this case, maybe $100,000 for equipment, and some bozo hooks power up wrong or does something just wrong, they're going to fight over whether it's under warranty or not. And if the guy was certified and put it in and still screwed up, well, then the OEM's probably going to say, yeah, we'll replace it because he was certified. You have no excuse, right? Maybe the guy just screwed up, had an off day, or maybe the guy's an idiot. I don't know. But he's certified. Put it in. So that's what you have to deal with now. So here's the story. When you're out there, you're going to want certified professional workers. That's how it is now. And now the Department of Labor and the Federal Communications Commission have laid out the details of what is a qualified person. They're laying it out. They'll make it official, what I say, October 14th. It's going to be official. And for all, I don't know how it's going to affect different companies, different industries, but I would say we're going to see a lot more professional people out there. And the guys that don't take this seriously or who are not professionals are going to be weeded out. Maybe not right away, maybe not in 3 months, maybe not in 6 months, but I would like to think in a year, things are going to be looking up for the professionals. And guys, if you already have all these certifications and qualifications, I applaud you. I congratulate you, and I thank you for your service out there. Trust me, anyone who does this job is putting their life on the line. So why not have us all make sure that the people who do put their life on the line are qualified? Let's not just say anymore from now on that, you know, he did it for the money. Let's say from now on, from this point on, or let's say from October 14th on, from the day they make the announcement and make it official, let's say from that day on, October 14th, 2014, everyone should be certified, qualified, and professional who goes out and does this. They won't just say, well, I did it for the money. I did it for the money. Now you're going to do it because it's your profession. It's the beginning of your career path, or let's say somewhere in your career path in the wireless industry. It's on your path in the wireless industry career, okay? I'm going to report about it, but OSHA and the Department of Labor are taking away every excuse that there is for these accidents. This is a big one. They're taking away every issue that they can see right now for accidents, and hopefully the tie-off points will be the next one. That's my next big push, to make sure that the tower owners put tie-off points like wherever you can reach it. Every 5 or 6 feet, I think, would be good. That's my opinion. It's not in here. I just think we need more tie-off points on towers. And I was looking on Facebook tonight, and I just saw another guy climbing a monopole, no safety climb, the legs aren't rated, and of course, you know, someone's got to go up first, right? One more dangerous tower, that something has to be done, okay? Something has to be done to make these safer. So once we have these qualified and certified climbers, you got a choice. Might as well take the pegs off the tower, and just plan on taking cranes out to every tower. Because anything they deem is not safe, they're going to ask for a crane. And trust me, cranes are going to be a lot of money every time you want to do maintenance, repairs, upgrades, changes, anything. If you're doing an install, you should probably have a crane out there anyway in a lot of these monopoles. All right, that's it, guys. Be safe, be smart, pay attention to what you're doing, make a plan, follow a plan, don't be afraid to alter the plan if you can make it better. All right, guys. Arrive alive when you get home at night. Be safe, be smart, pay attention. See ya.